the tape deck has screwed up our opening music, but indeed, this is a Bathurst Piers Broadsides here on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM.
The public participation process and say that you're doing anything but telling the fox to guard the chicken house.
Stay with us for 2 hours of civil rights,
big difference,
civil wrongs, and we'll try to right some
of
those wrongs.
Are you that naive, or are you just pretending to be
naive? I guess I'm that naive.
Yeah, really.
Really.
I'm sorry.
Non-profit. This is the Catholic Church is the richest.
What Mercy's setting up is a sham. I don't understand that.
Wait a second. Hold on a second. Do you guys, wait, let me ask a question. Do you guys object to...
And you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. The sounds of controversy around the affordable housing hoax being pushed by City Council and Mayor Keith Sugar in a backyard squabble with angry constituents and supporters who feel they're being sold out by the City Council on the matter of the Dolphin Lee Project. That'll be coming up today on your 2.5-hour show, Bathurst Piers Broadsides. I'm coming at you now from 11 to 1:30. We're a little uncoordinated this morning, running in three different directions. There's a protest going on downtown every day from 12 to 6. Kind of a tabling preparation for protest as we attempt to challenge the sleeping ban and the spring mobilization to end the sleeping ban. That's in front of the Del Mar Theater. And there's also some private meetings brewing that I have to run off to, and I'm going to try to slip in a loop tape later. Plus, today we're having the continuation of a very important conversation we began on Thursday with Julie Lee, who is the daughter of Vernon Lee, owner of the Lee property, one of the three properties in question in the City Council's latest Evict 'em, Destroy the Housing to Save It plan, which is supposed to create affordable housing for hundreds of people, but many of us believe will end up evicting the very people it is intended to save, which actually is sort of a traditional role of urban renewal. In the 60s and 70s, we see that returning with a vengeance in 2000 here in Santa Cruz. If you want to join this ongoing discussion, you can join us at 427-3772. Should Hispanic people be allowed housing? Should they have any choices in this situation? Or should they be forced to essentially roll over for a deal concocted behind closed doors by Catherine Byers, Mercy Housing, and her majority of Byers is currently shadow mayor of the Santa Cruz City Council. The nominal titular mayor is Keith Sugar, but since he doesn't control a voting block, it's Catherine Byers who makes the choices and wins the votes. That would be okay if Sugar were willing to speak up loudly and clearly to let him rob you right and left and never make a fight. Voting unanimously for this giveaway, and there's no indication that they will stop doing so. Ominously enough, at the Tuesday City Council meeting on March 14th, coming up two days down the road, there is a special item on the closed litigation agenda at 1 o'clock. That item involves acquisition of the Dolphin, acquisition of the Lee, and acquisition of what's called the Rex Court property, the three properties that together will make up this so-called affordable housing project, which will be evicting several hundred entirely Hispanic families, people, I should say. I'm talking about 40 or 50 or 60 families. So we're going to be talking about that more. Julie Lee is due to come in at about 11:20.
Yes, we're back with our original theme song music.
Other things, because again, as I said, I'm going to try to run toward the end of the show, because I'd like to get to a meeting and also
riot and rumble show.
We are at the table,
bringing some light to dark places,
Pacific,
and getting
struggling
the darkness
to get the community to stand behind a loud, clear voice, possibly with their
on this show by giving a call to 427-3772. That's our call-in line. Lines are usually open. We only have one of them, but
according to our
really sensitive to phone calls. We are willing to stop tapes to get them. We'll stop
couple of
traffic.
Details to begin with.
We'll stop talking
board,
and hear what
I
you have to
not
say.
To talk about much.
Particularly what you have
this
to say
tomorrow
is something you think should be shared with the community. So join us here
come to the conclusion
for 2 hours,
the best way
six
to
eight, special guest star tonight, Frank Pusilek,
to talk really about
driven from Santa Cruz by the authorities that be here.
Is kind of what Scott Graham has proposed for the redevelopment
once
agency.
A
citizen plan
originator
oversight
of
commission
of a very interesting
that really has some power and really comes from the community and is not simply
a chance
the tool
to actually sleep
or the
safely
pals
at night. It's currently up for discussion again.
For example,
this time under the initiation
Catherine Byers regularly
of Michael
points her buddies
Schmidt, CEO
to
the Chamber
to
of Commerce.
Board, I suppose other
Frank
other
was sort of a
Jim King, an old pal of hers from the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, notoriously
paid the price
bad
for that kind of
rejected by at least three activists I've known who worked with this man closely.
He's
now the
made
swing vote
on this town. We're going to talk to him.
Citizens Police Review
he's
Board.
Back.
Not that
he's
doing any swinging one way or the
feisty,
other.
He's feisty. He's
except
friendly.
Except the wind as they strangle any attempts at real police review. But we need to consider a police commission, just like Scott Graham has suggested, a Citizens Commission above the planning or the redevelopment agency that has
that
real
mic.
Power
say
to control and oversee what's going
it,
on in the police department.
To kiss
and that's
also
not something that's
us,
a little sort
that,
of secondary agency to which people send complaints and they get mired
guy,
in confidentiality requirements
the,
and sidelined because no serious complaints can be heard and investigated in a timely manner if the city council
in the background there we got two mics and three
not to and they will in every
serious
complaint as a claim against the city.
Before we do any of our
duty,
however, we are going to do a bit of
running the city.
Well, we'll turn to the streets
in
for a brief interview, and then we'll go back.
Sony has told me on at least one occasion he regards the police department as his client. It's not the citizens of Santa Cruz, not the city of Santa Cruz, it's the police department. And I believe him. Because recently when I was
it's about 15
sitting on
to
the
base
of the statue of Tom Scribner, the musical saga in front of the bookshop Santa Cruz, as many people do,
Mark
just sort of relaxing
and
one
Mark,
evening.
Mark, you're looking better than
Sergeant
you were a year
Sanders
ago. And
told me to move,
I recall you came over to the house,
why.
You've been assaulted by three or four people. And
I got ticketed,
actually,
I got threatened with arrest,
$162
ticket, I took it to Barrisoni, he refused to dismiss it and said,
any
police department is my client.
No, not that.
When he finally, the city council unanimously dismissed this ticket.
Hassles from private citizens? From the
closed litigation
well,
session several months ago
this cop said the church called the
three city council members and their families sitting
and
on
I came from
base
the opposite direction.
Election
I just crossed the street and was on the sidewalk
Barrisoni,
and the cop stopped
refused
said
to say
the church called the police and doesn't want
the red church the
for people sitting on the base of that statue. He continues
there
to believe
that's right next to the farmer's market
rules,
across
I guess
the street.
Yeah. It does. So
and I told him, well, I'm not on
an interview
property.
Or two from the street.
And I got a little irritated and raised my voice a little bit.
Sure it's not
and
the
so
essence.
He,
and let's,
but what he did, he checked, and I had some warrants.
Did he have you arrested?
There's a lot of families I know live in
what were the warrants
with
for?
Children.
Well, like
and
the ones
tough
were
on them to find a safe place to park at night.
You went pee-pee.
Where they feel safe.
Yeah. And the other one,
I think that there has to be better usage of what we have in our area as far as parking lots and things like that.
One of them I didn't do that.
What can be used at night for the many people who are
doing community service.
So I did that.
You've noticed that down on the beach area there are parking lots that are vacant, right?
During the week, the parking for the boardwalk is completely empty.
Well, you saw maybe you didn't, but there are the headlines in the Sentinel about two or three weeks ago about the chief of police releasing figures on beatings. It looks like homeless people get beaten,
the property, which goes empty during the week.
40 to 100 times the rate of people in houses, something like that.
I agree.
Is that still happening?
From what I understand,
for the free radio audience,
two other people in the Capitol area
waiting
for buses.
I think that people just have to keep
on
fighting for this issue because it's basically no middle class anymore. What my husband does and what my husband would have been considered middle class perhaps back in the 50s or 60s.
No, I'm not homeless. I live in a house and they go, well,
nothing in between. And there has to be something that has to break for the people that are working
that
are in between and need housing.
The lady, you know, security guard.
Thank you very much.
That's her friend. She told me that.
When are we going to be
and
helped?
These are just a few, some of the really
their main emphasis is if you're homeless.
Provocative statements, not just
I don't
from
know if
people who are currently homeless.
What?
When did
a lot
this
of
thing happen? You know,
getting that direction.
Well, she
and
told
for the
me
first
about
time,
it about a month ago.
Looks
so
like they're.
The thing that happened to you happened like in April of last year.
That's where they're going.
And this was
ago.
Even more recent.
It's quite
this
an impressive situation.
Well, no, I think maybe it was around.
Out there on the streets. We're talking
November.
To people who are upper middle
this
class,
happened to these other folks?
Assistants, accountants.
These were two separate incidents?
Basically, kind of looked like you.
As well
you know,
as people
had like
who are homeless and getting
a big beard and long hair.
Everybody makes to beat me up, you know.
This,
no, actually, I've never been assaulted physically.
And all they're getting
here's your chance, folks. Who's going to be the first? I've never been assaulted in Santa Cruz, which I'm grateful because a lot of people have.
Which doesn't involve
I'm just
doing anything except asking the governor if he wants to open
thing
up.
Thing is,
this
I
very,
think if you're on the streets at night, you're
unsightly,
more
really kind of inappropriate.
If you're in a car
place
or in
a
house or something,
road,
if you have a place to be out of
there.
In fact, I haven't gone back to Capitola since then.
Concentration what about Santa Cruz? There are, like,
wire,
they estimate 700 to 1,500 homeless people outdoors every night, at least.
two-thirds of those without cars. My question to you, Mark, is are those folks, you think, in greater danger of assault? Have you heard of them getting beaten up?
Well, I was just going to say, three times
in 2 weeks I
walked by that bench right by the bus station, and there's blood on the sidewalk.
But for a smaller
number of people who are disabled, some women, I've never seen anything happen, but
we're talking about nipples are bleeding,
blood there again.
A nothing solution.
So,
which I suppose has been prepared behind closed doors, and I'm glad that at least the issue has come back.
Apparently, there is.
The mayor is ignoring his own homeless issues task force. He's ignoring the community action board. He's refusing to speak up on these issues. Though I think personally, Sugar would vote for these proposals. He does not seem to have the balls or the political wisdom to speak out for them in public forums in such a way.
Would safe sleeping zones help the situation, like places where people could sleep without being afraid of the police ticketing them?
I don't know why they call this place out here the shelter, because they don't shelter.
Serious matter about
forced
psychiatric drug treatment. There is a law coming up in California.
From what I understand, maybe they do sometimes let people sleep inside the place that they eat.
Loosen the restrictions.
Not generally. It's a pickup point for the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program, which goes to church floors and to the armory.
Because all you need is a mental health worker,
and that happens
or a police
like around 3:30 to 5:30. They take people, and then there's a maximum of about 160 people that go to both the church and the armory as a totality. So that's, I guess, you know, and when it's raining,
that's a legitimate criteria.
Shelter is filled up, so there hasn't been any space.
Now they're considering the law.
I mean, the armory and the church.
So the armory is going now.
Will be going until April. Has been going since November.
So we're going to force them to take
every night if you want to use it is available. You sleep outside
when there's no substantial and meaningful connection between medication and cure in any of these cases.
Why is that?
Because
there are some people who will credit it and believe that's a good way to go, and that's fine if they make that choice.
But
to forcibly medicate people under threat of incarceration, and to be able to do so more and more easily, have people come to your house with medications and demand you take them, or you'll be put in the hospital. That's what's happening in 40 states right now. California is going to be one of those states unless we take some action around that.
For somebody to be there.
Anything else you want to add, Mark, before I go off and stuff my face?
Articles. I'll read you one by David Oakes, who writes the
There was something I was thinking
Denver
of
before I leave my phone call.
When I came over, but now I don't remember what it was. I got off on that violence thing. I haven't had any problems with that.
I think
but
you correct
this, there's another thing where
current existing
the kids,
here,
I guess, are...
Except you left out a little detail.
One kid walked up behind me and started barking.
Anybody
right
barking like a dog.
This other kid goes, "Oh, he barked at you. You better look out."
So they were making fun of the way you look.
No, I think they were saying, you know,
finding had to be by a psychiatrist.
Or
they could put you in a 3-day
I guess that's how dogs mate.
Gave him a dirty look.
I know the police officer talks with that power. I know this sounds like he was making fun of you.
Recently,
in the case of umbrella,
ridiculing
umbrella man on the mall,
kind of thing irritates.
I would imagine.
Children getting on my nerves.
He was taken away about a week ago.
I just have to deal with that better somehow.
Because he wouldn't talk to the
I was wondering if you know of any places that,
instead,
other than
he walked across
the church,
called the police department, that I am being
are supplying shelter.
That what?
Are supplying any kind of shelter?
If you have a vehicle, it's legal to sleep in various places, like
he's been released on the streets. He
in a business parking lot with the permission of the business, no more than two vehicles, written permission.
Quite, you know, he makes choices that I don't necessarily agree with. I don't think it helps his president.
It's not for that.
Maybe we're talking to a man who knows jails, a writer here on the street, in front of the, what the hell is it called, Graphics.
But once you get a mental health
that's the next interview. We're going to have to wait on that one.
That goes away.
You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM.
Well,
and as I said before, in the studio
the
with
law,
us tonight,
very,
we have
very
a special
terrible,
guest
even worse
who actually hasn't been on the air for two or three years. You actually, I don't think, Frank, you've ever been on the air live. We were, I guess, interviewed several times.
And I believe you're having a meeting on Monday at 5:30.
Yes.
Give us a little bit of your sordid history here in Santa Cruz.
Not really.
A long time ago, I came here to go to university. I loved
it. Well, sometimes I call ourselves a farce,
years,
too, but
from the university
we have
California,
a
Santa
certain
Cruz.
Mandate, and we're attempting
I left
to do it.
In
almost
77.
Over. Personally, as soon
went
as
to San
it's
Diego,
done,
then traveled around the world, worked in Oklahoma, taught at the University of Oklahoma.
I might feel better.
And then came back
anyway,
in 96.
The meeting Monday is to continue
kind of as a dream to kind of retire here and work here.
All the
and I always wanted to be part of Santa Cruz and Santa Cruz kind
the
of community services.
Of our report to the
I helped start
council.
New services.
Well, I guess
in effect,
the
work
here.
Is done at the end of this month.
And
yeah,
when
my
I came back,
reports,
I,
which I think are
worked for a while with friends and then got a job with Citizens Committee for the Homeless.
Citizens Committee for the Homeless is the group that was running the Interface Shelter Satellite Shelter Program. Which, of course, gives emergency shelter to homeless people, runs the armory. And they were also running, I guess, the homeless garden that. Project that time
that
and
actually
the so-called community house
oh, yeah,
project.
A meaningful proposal. And I think that your commission
you
is in a position to do that.
I was hired to be the director, the developer and director of the new community house program. So I was the director of one of the three programs run by Citizens
Committee. Well, that happens to a lot of their advising bodies. Other political people have criticized the city for having, you know, these 16 or whatever.
May of
66,
I think.
96?
I'm
permanent
sorry, 96.
Advising
those
bodies
years go by so
yes.
quickly.
Yeah. Ad hoc ones or task
and how long did you, were you with
and
the
then
CCH?
Doing what they want anyway.
I was with them for
right, well, I don't think we should let them get away with it, particularly
months,
in situations that are life-threatening, and I think yours, your body is
that
covering
that was about the time when a lot of us
like
were
that.
In the City Hall
I also
protesting
want to invite you to
City Hall sleepers
stay with us as Julie Lee comes
because
on
of the city's anti-homeless sleeping ban, which for anyone who has been asleep for the last 5 years makes it illegal for homeless people to sleep outside in vehicles on all public property and much private property,
destroy
which of course criminalizes
the housing to save it,
95% of the homeless
I'm
people in Santa
with
Cruz.
The show, but I might not
summer,
stay online, but my question on that is,
night.
Has the city
you were hired by the Citizens Committee for the Homeless primarily to begin a project
well, they got a letter
that would,
that's been notarized,
sort of
which
the trailer project that's now the community house project
Elizabeth
that would house
Vogel, but to me
30
it's
or
so
40 people in
the
transitional program.
Right.
The
umbrella program
to assist them manufacturers would definitely throw it out immediately. So I'll let you hear that as we proceed. And
now, this was kind of a controversial program for some of us because 6 months before you were hired, the site of that program, the Coral Street Open Air Shelter, had in fact given shelter and sanctuary to several hundred homeless people in tents and
right.
with sleeping bags.
Well, I guess people
these
can
people
call you
driven
if they
want to
get
area,
the exact time and come to this
by yeah. proclamations
yeah,
from Mayor Mike Rutkin together with
home is your
right,
edicts from Paul Merceau and
great. Well, listen, thank you, Linda, and I will
Daryl Darling
later in the show,
who were then kind of covering the campground. The campground had existed sort of as a sanctuary during the summer.
Getting back to the psychiatric
kind of known as the
forced drugging coming our way
shelter.
Unless we do something
right.
about
and
it.
Here's a letter due to some organizing by activists in the summer of 1995, they got permission
by
to keep tents
extremist
up,
psychiatrist Eve
which allowed
Fuller
people to actually have shelter,
in psychiatric
believe it or not. And it was not really a technical violation of the camping ban
or even
March
of the sleeping ban
sections of
the
camping ordinance.
The
because
the
it was an offense in
drugging of citizens
side or backyard,
even
which
in
was an
supposed
exception
sanctity of their own
to the camping
homes,
ordinance.
Profoundly intrusive human
and
rights
so it actually was legal,
which is
although later on they claimed that there had been no permit for it,
and
therefore for
some reason
it was
many
not
of our
legal
members
because it hadn't been permitted.
Trauma of forced
but in any case, there was a lot of double dealing that went on as
the second time in less than
when they drove people off that piece of property using a heavy rain as a pretext, and also the claim that they were going to begin building community house, which the trailer project that you were hired 6 months later to work
this
on,
time, Tory is claiming
which in fact
forced drugging of people with tuberculosis is a good that tuberculosis is a good analogy for forced
several
drugging
years later. So
for those
people
of us who are diagnosed
were driven into a situation
disorders.
Where many of them died. I should say
there are
several
two possibilities.
Died.
On the one hand, is Tory calling
Hopkins
us deadly pathogens? Let me assure
nobody
your
died
that we
while that campground was
human
existence.
Beings.
The campground there were
scapegoating, demonizing, and targeting.
There was drug use. There was alcohol use. There was
some
violence.
In the body politic,
there were numerous complaints. But there were no deaths because they were near services.
On the other hand, is
Tory
claiming that our bodies are
community,
by a disease
rough
that is similar to tuberculosis,
some, and sub-communities
so,
all help each other.
There is no, still no
so you
test,
began the
test,
community house
scan,
project, and
screen
what I tend to think of with you is, of course, how you were
psychiatric disorders
shafted
by
the Citizens Committee for the Homeless,
drugging.
Which I think I warned
in
you
fact,
about in May of 1996 when
we
actually met in June or July. You came over, we all had a meeting at a house on Branson 40.
Apparently what Tory cannot accomplish by science,
you're very surprised because nobody from the Citizens Committee for the Homeless had wanted
addressing the causes of violence in our society would take massive social change.
There is
no magical peace
pill
that
involved in protests
quick
and
who
had only
the
most
of violence,
the lowest opinions
mental and emotional withdrawal effects after
you were quite optimistic at that point, weren't
that
you?
Can be so powerful
sure.
And these effects are exploited by Tory to
like
justify
a
lifetime of forced drugging.
That
When are the editors of psychiatric services going to start running editorials about challenging the narrow-minded reductionist mechanical chemical crusade approach promoted by the psychiatric drug industry, which is one of the main sources of funding for the American Psychiatric Association?
It was a way for me
there are more effective, more humane, more sustainable ways to help people in severe crisis than the frightening violence of forcing a potentially deadly chemical into us against our will to control our thoughts and feelings. Pushing for psychiatric drugging is convincing more and more psychiatric survivors to avoid seeking any help from the mental health system.
Of people who wanted to do
your repeated decision to publish Terry's venom shows they may be right.
Of organizing it in a way
and
so
then
that
there's
it made
a very
sense.
Interesting
so
series of did you do this sort of on your own, or did people like Councilmember Scott Kennedy come to you, or Councilmember Catherine Byers, who was also on the Citizens Committee for the Homeless Board? Did these people initiate action? I know they were plenty annoyed with the City Hall Sleepers protest, and I think in the fall of 1996, Kennedy became desperate, fearing that the thing would go on forever. It had already gone on for 7 months, and wanted CCH to open up some kind of a so-called safe haven program
to condemn
legislation that would allow easier forced psychiatric drug treatments. An insidious practice based on scientific misinformation and violation of civil liberties. Unfortunately, this health policy has already gone national. Most states have laws on the books that enable health authorities to ensure that mentally ill take their medications. Drugs like Thorazine, Clozapine, and Haldol will hopefully keep them free from the major features of severe mental illness, including disorientation and hallucination.
There was a famous so-called lockdown at City Council
also caused
in
1996 when studies at the medical schools of Harvard and Yale University in Montreal, Canada, have shown that these medications can damage the brain, with some causing involuntary movements and tardive dyskinesia.
They actually went through two jury trials.
More than 1 million of those who are mentally ill, including perhaps more than 100,000 homeless people, may eventually be subject to forced drugging should this health policy
be
ultimately spread across the country.
They were able to succeed.
The proposed California legislation
was paved
yet another road,
which happened many months later.
But
of course, the issue was the City Council under Mayor Mike Rotkin was refusing to consider any changes in the sleeping ban ordinance, which in essence made sleeping illegal. And covering up with blankets illegal. He also made numerous other things illegal, like having
certain gentleness.
Political signs at City Hall above
well, forget that. We're dealing here with a hard-boiled
eating
health
food
policy
at City Hall for
court order and allows the chemistry crusaders to enter homes to demand compliance with drug regimes.
So I think, yeah, that
right
sort of
step
was the
out
background.
Of hospital and confinement
I guess I'd suggest the September protests
the
sort of freaked out the council members. What's coming next, they wondered, and I guess they set you to work on a plan for a safe haven.
That's probably what happened. I didn't know that, and all I knew is that the Board of Directors came to me and said, the City Council has come to us and said, develop a safe haven.
Well, have you had your medication today?
What does safe haven mean? What did that mean?
Not yet, so watch out.
All right,
well, go ahead.
Similar to the campground program that had already existed.
I'd like to
that it was some kind of program where there was a place that was controlled in some way, that was sponsored in some way, that was safe enough where homeless people could spend the night protected safely. And I was glad. I thought, great, it's about time, because I had assumed that that kind of situation was obviously necessary in this city. So I thought, great. So I went. I set about finding it, developing. I designed the program, set up the funding in the sense of wrote a budget, checked out the history of the camping program, and basically built a whole program. I was asked to build it in three different structures. I did that, and then we set about finding a place.
What do you mean by three different structures?
Well, they wanted me to design one program that was in one place, where all the homeless people would come to one place and each evening and be safe. And then they said, and they wanted that done as the way it should be done, skillfully, professionally staffed and the whole thing, and give us a program and a budget for that. Then give us a shoestring program. What can we do for the minimum amount of money that would be feasible and safe?
Of every resident,
and
not just
a third program was give us a program that's in two or three different locations. So maybe there's a location in Capitola, maybe there's a location in the county someplace, and a location in Santa Cruz someplace. We could divide the homeless people into
Jane, before you go on, are you just not going
to
be around for the next half hour? Because we'd like to finish up this segment.
Okay, sorry about that. I am babysitting.
So we went about looking. For
no, I want you to get. Sure, I want you to get. I want you to get more than that in. I just have you got a little time, like in the time ahead, or what's your situation?
To the council members.
I
I have to leave, and I just want to make one real quick statement. Okay, go ahead, sure, because we're going to be talking about these things.
Okay, I'd like people to realize that,
I learned
that
what
there are
the,
folks in that
the
situation
was,
who
the
are
the
not
run
otherwise
game.
Because criminals.
Because everybody said, gee, it's a great idea, we really want to do it, it's a good thing, it needs to be done, and as soon as we find a place, we'll do it.
In that way,
so
there are at least the number
what I didn't
of
understand at the point was that this is probably the third or fourth go-around of the look at all the possible places in the whole county.
With this project,
and so we went back and looked at the same places again, which I would find out as I was taken to see places either by county parks people or by,
by,
we went to Poganip, we went
to
the Armory, we went to the campgrounds, we went to, I don't remember the names of places, but the place out on Highway 9 that used to be old Sycamore Grove.
About
we went
these same
to
people who are
a place in Capitola, we went to De La Viega, we went to all
well, I know you'll be showing up at 1 o'clock on Tuesday,
and
right before the closed session. They ask these same questions to our council members.
Wrong with every place.
Thank
or
you.
I'd like other
could
people
really
who
work
who
if
might
this wasn't true. This could really work here if this wasn't true. And there wasn't good drainage at Poganip, or there wasn't good. It might rain, and if it rains, Sycamore Grove will flood out and will drown the poor people. And we don't have a way to control the Armory is like a prison in
420-5020 is the number to call. You can do it now. It's a 24-hour number, Jan. I got a roll on
you.
All right, thank you.
Sure. All the crap that you know you have to deal with.
And
that
was Jane Baer, who for years has been fighting for
but you don't use those things
improvements in the beach flats and
because
has been getting
nobody
the cold shoulder, to say the least, from the city. She's actually proposed her own alternate plan. She suggested for affordable housing involving
the
development of Rex Court and other properties not involving the Dolphin Lee, which are probably
the
most densely populated housing in the beach flats at the moment.
So
anyway, we're going to talk about that shortly. I'm going to finish up this article, and I'm going to go dredge up Julie, and we're going to continue. Again, we're talking about forced treatment. The proposed California legislation would pave yet another road to community-assisted treatment. This is one of those phrases that might suggest a certain gentleness. Well, forget that. We're dealing here with a hard-boiled health policy that rules by court order and allows the chemistry crusaders to enter homes to demand compliance with drug regimens, the right to step out of hospital confinement and remain in the community as the trade-off for antipsychotic treatment. Those groups supporting forced treatment deemed necessary by health authorities include the Treatment Advocacy Center and the National Alliance for Mentally ill. One of the usual arguments is that there are many tens of thousands of mentally ill people who do not know they are sick. They therefore must be helped. If they are not, then many of these people will commit violent acts, including murder. So therefore, forced drug treatment is not only good for the patient, but also for society. If anything, it is likely this call to fear has stoked public support of forced drugging. Those opposed to community-assisted treatment, quote-unquote, and efforts in the works to make it even more draconian, claim the scientific evidence offered up in support of quelling significant amounts of violence through forced drugging requires a vivid imagination. I agree. I've looked at the available science, and I'm mystified by some of the interpretation
that's
become the spine of this adventurism in the name of compassion
and concern
lack of
strong direction. I know that we'd
have buyers. Studies do show that some groups of psychiatric patients released
a year before running through the same
greater risk of committing violence. Other groups of patients do not. And here's the additional rub. There is no appropriate follow-up study that has determined whether the absence of treatment leads to violence. The very foundation of forced treatment is ideology and not science. Since this is the internet, let me issue a challenge. Anyone advocating forced drug treatment who has credible scientific evidence that will reduce violence should send me
the
references to
the
supporting science. We'll post your positions
and
I'll respond. Let's get this issue into the open for debate. Let's see what these policies really hinge on. Next week we'll examine what other claims made
of course
by
we want
the
it.
Other claims
and
made by the advocates of forced
as
drug
soon as
treatment.
We organize it correctly and
this
we
is
get
again by
sure
Nicholas Regush, who's a national ABC commentator, and
right
I don't think he got much in the way
golly,
of response on
it.
That, because
and
his
I
next,
said,
he has a three-part
you
series,
know
the second part series did,
you,
didn't
you
mention
have
that he got
the money
anything.
Available
we're
going to
be following that one, hopefully, but
I mean,
right now we've got some visitors.
It became obvious to me
we're
that
give them
it
the time
was
to set up. I'm going to run through a few other things.
And
first,
I got frustrated. I went to the board of directors.
Our main
of
topic
citizens
for
committee,
the
and I said,
morning
is,
before
this
we
is not gonna
turn to
this. We have the places are there if you want to use them. We have
the San Jose protest.
We have the money is available. City Council has it.
For homeless people
there
in
are
San
places
Jose.
To get the money.
But before we get there,
when Community House needed money
Santa
came out
Cruz,
of the woodwork. It
situation
came out
where folks who are,
of course, what I call the
$2 million
Rolls Royce
project,
great alarm
for 40 people.
About the fact that
and you were looking
at something like for what $150,000
from the
project for 80 or 90 or 100 people.
Right, exactly right.
It would
and
serve
so
a lot more people and get my 1/10 or 1/20 the cost.
We raised $1 million for Community House with City Council's help and with
as we proceed.
Community help. No, what is it? The
let me actually play you an interview, and I'll stoke that up, and we can then return and get down with our live guest. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I'm your host, Bathrop Spear, Robert Norse. This is, of course, Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Well, I just remember a meeting that I had with Catherine
Byers. Call number 427-3772, voicemail 427-4523 if you want to leave us a message.
And you can send us a fat, hefty cherry post office box
7507-95061 in Santa Cruz.
Community House site, which was not then being used.
25 or so in front of the Del Mar on March 10th, Friday afternoon, sunny day, windy day. What's your name, sir?
My name is Brian.
You proposed that
I'm a camper.
Yes.
I camp out to the mountain in Santa Cruz.
Yes.
But the last year, and the top, they never could find my camper. And they've been there for so long.
And it was there. And it wasn't
I rely
being
on
used,
it.
And it wasn't
going to cost any money.
Right
to keep there free.
They had water, they had food.
Keep my stuff dry with a tarp.
They had already used it and made it work.
The tarp?
Yeah.
And it seemed to me the obvious.
How long have you been there?
If you wanted for 3 months,
how long
6 months,
have you been there? How many
months
have
you been there?
3 or 4 years. 3 or 4 years.
We don't know when. So
and have you ever had any complaints? Has anyone complained about your camp?
And they said, oh my God.
No.
No way.
And have you had some problems with the police?
No. They couldn't find it.
They couldn't find it. So what happened?
Jesus.
I'm happy that they can't find it.
And I never understood.
We're happy too.
What the problem was.
Anything else you want to say for Free Radio? Anything else you want to say?
It was uncontrolled.
The radio people.
There was,
to the public.
Horrible things happening there. And it was turning into
a long rock. Down
and I never
the railroad
got real specific
track.
On what that uncontrollable mess
but
was.
But the night time when it's raining, that we are in.
And Daryl Darling, and, who had been involved a great deal
I've been
in the
through it so many times that I can't do it.
Was no longer
and
a great deal involved in what
I have,
was doing. He was busy.
A working platform, a working platform to keep it up, to keep it dry from the rain. My camp is about 10 feet wide, 10 feet long, night ago.
City Council has come to us and said, let's do this. So let's do this.
Have police bothered you on the streets?
No yeah. sanitation,
and what,
and
what
no
happened?
Drainage, and there's no control. And
can we say porta potties?
They
can we say use
they are paid
the restrooms 50 feet away from the service
they
center?
They can be
kicked. Or we couldn't.
One time,
at that time.
I got
Darling, of course, was the man who actually sabotaged.
They'd be out die.
You may have thought
they
good work
been kicked about 3 years ago.
At the
time,
time,
put me at
the contract with Save Our Shelter.
They'd be out die seven times. And I didn't like it. I didn't think it was right.
15 days after January 1st,
I didn't agree with their ban to sleep out there. They put me there. The guy got sleepy. Out here, I go to my camp.
Secure because of a lack of political will.
You're welcome.
Your name again?
Ryan.
Thank you, Ryan.
There was no serious intention to do it.
Call you.
And but there was a game played, is yes, we want to do it, yes, we'll provide the money, yes, please, just do this, do that, and we'll do it.
Question now, of course, is the game being played again with Michael Schmidt and his so-called safe zones, which
we'll hear about
those
folks
on the road
soon. Right now, I'd like to introduce you to a new guest in the studio, a man who actually hasn't got a lot of time, so we're going to do a quick interview before he zips out the door.
Small percentage of homeless people, those
who
are disabled,
how are you doing?
With families,
I'm good.
I'm women.
We got
elderly.
Say again.
It's a kind of a triage situation.
I think we can hear you there.
Supported him.
I'm doing good. I know that you were here. Your course,
the idea acceptable for that group might then later lead to something else.
Carlos Ibanez.
It is still only a
and you came with Julie
from the
league.
I'm wondering, you think the same apartment complex?
But you yourself are also a you were a city worker for 20 years. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
What kind of work did you do, Carlos?
I was a sanitation worker.
Happened on the city council.
Yeah.
What kind? What does that involve, being a sanitation worker?
Well, it involves picking up garbage.
That's a whole story there, I'll tell you.
You know,
pick up after all the rest of us. You carry away our shit.
Like a really good guy. He's trying to do the right thing, and I'm amazed that he's gotten the backing of his board of directors.
I work in drop boxes.
And maybe since he's coming at it from the business side, maybe
there's... Does that kind of pay well? How's the wage on that?
But I'm afraid he's going to run into the same...
Okay for Santa Cruz, it's pretty good. You know,
the same game.
How can the community... Is it a living wage, like $15 an hour, $20 an hour?
Yeah, probably. I ended up probably making around $17 an hour.
Oh, we haven't got the funding. Oh, we haven't got the place. That becomes a living wage about it, right about there. Oh, we haven't got the votes. You got a good union? What's the story with that? Is there a way that the community can mobilize and say, no, we've got to do it, and we've got to do it now?
They're fighting for me right now. Community, oh.
And that kind of brings us to the moral
to me,
of the story, or at the point of the story anyway. You, at 19
does,
years of service, you took
will.
A leave of absence
if
due to a medical condition.
Chamber
That's
of Commerce.
Correct.
You want to talk about that at all?
People that are members of the Chamber of Commerce, if they're serious about what they want
to
do,
well, you took a leave of absence due to a medical condition, and
they have the power,
as I understand it, and we talked about this briefly last week, and I'm kind of rushing through my notes here to make sure I don't get this wrong.
And businesses decide
you went into treatment while you were on long-term disability, and then you were given an order to return to work,
put a fund
or receive
together and have a certain amount of money and tell
some
the
kind of a legal paper was an intent
to
terminate.
Happen.
Right.
And he goes to the city council as
so
the representative of the community.
So you need to take, after 20 years of work, you need to take time off to get some
money
treatment for your medical condition.
Say,
right. And tell me what happened then.
You match it.
And they wrote me a letter saying if
move.
I didn't make
if
it
he does that,
so and so date that they would terminate me.
How long had they given you to get treatment by the time they sent you this letter?
Hi, Uncle Robert. It's David Silva.
Months? Was it weeks?
A couple of months?
And you hadn't completed
your
treatment?
No, I haven't.
So what was your response to
that? So I can't hear it right now. I haven't heard it for the past minute. But I just want
to
say that the rigmarole, the runaround,
because I was
always
still
answering
on
the question, where.
And they wanted
I don't
to come
think
back
that question is
going to
be answered.
But you said, no, I still... Was this on your doctor's advice, not going back to work?
Right.
The police, which means give taking the sleeping bag away from them.
So what I had to do was I had to go...
When the sleeping bag is taken away from them, all of a sudden the where is going to appear.
So what I had to do is
we all know that have done this footwork over and over again, where the wares are. But the city council refuses to see it because Captain Byer says, I don't know where the wares are.
Has an impact on your medical condition?
And since she says that, that's the Queen Catherine rule.
And then they fired you.
The sleeping ban is repealed.
And why did they fire
you? Sleeping.
For
suddenly they will
by,
need to have to create safe
I was
sleeping zone.
En route, on
suddenly,
break,
and they will
and
go
I
ahead
had
and
to
do
use
it.
The
so I think we should put our energies on that. And
David, before you go,
what Vanguard approach?
What you're saying has
I guess
historical
they saw
precedent
me going
because
up
when this
to my
happened
to
by judicial
bathroom,
activity in Pottinger decision in Miami, Florida, in 1992.
When you went pee pee without permission,
the neighboring counties began
fired for taking a dump without a permit. Amazing.
Oh, money will appear out of the sky.
I can't believe it.
They set up campgrounds. They didn't want people
and
to be sleeping everywhere, so they found somewhere for
when you're in a garbage truck.
So that's what we have to focus on, I think. I applaud Michael Schmidt. But
this
already, what Michael Schmidt's
where
done has already been reduced
to
what the Armory Park
has. I would say piss on the mayor's lawn.
And that's a maybe?
That's my motto.
I'm just really, really
no offense to you, Keith, or Catherine,
all
or sits into that golden throne next. If you can't, you know, it seems to me, if your own workers of the city who do the hardest and the most...
Quite a few
you know, disagreeable
and
work, hauling away the
March,
trash,
the
hauling
way,
away all that mountains of trash every morning,
from sleep. So
but they can't even stop to take a dump.
One night in a month of March,
good
call
to
me home, 429-5284.
You said, you also mentioned the due to your demotion
and
your pay cut, you had to rent out your house.
If you want to change
so have you been fired, or have you just been had your pay cut?
Can you explain to folks what those are, David?
Well, the rolling fast is just a way of the community taking
from a
turns
sanitation
those that are on progressive or full fast.
To
each person just takes one day.
Sweeper.
So they spank you. They spank you for going and using your bathroom.
The month of March,
I see. Well, you're a person of color.
We're having
that before to say. I mean, you're and what is your first language?
But out of that 70 people,
your second language?
More than 10%.
And are you, I mean, you
started, about 10% of
I'm just trying to see if there, is there a race element in this, or am I kind of being a race card player here? What's happening? Is that having to do with it? They're just stupid to everybody, white and people of color.
The next 2 weeks, you give up lunches. And then the third step, you give up all three meals. I think this is what's going to take.
So I don't really know what the answer to that one
you
is.
You know that there's
but,
a rumor that in the second...
what are you doing about this? You got a lawyer? Are you pressing on with it?
Yeah,
second,
I appealed it twice,
okay,
and they turned me down.
He is going to be bringing
and we send a letter in for arbitration.
So.
Yeah, but it's
and
a safe
they denied
zone
that
safe
one,
places,
saying
you know,
that I didn't submit
that, you know,
it on time.
We had the safe
and that's
zone
not
concept
true.
So that it would be
on time.
Originally designed so that it would be one contiguous
like,
area of the industrial park, one
on
end.
Right now.
We have a somebody apparently wants to talk about this on the air. Let's see who's on the air.
And SoCal to around the Gulch. So it'd be one contiguous
Radio.
Area.
No,
they're talking about just little spots, but those aren't zones.
Okay.
As you know, I'm on the Equal Employment
well,
Opportunity
I guess
Commission.
You are also working on
Santa Cruz initiative. By the way, we need people to be out in front of the No One 21, both at the Vets and at the Civic Auditorium tomorrow.
They took away
to
our
gather signatures
of hearing.
And we need people on election day at the polls to gather signatures for the initiative to decriminalize sleep and create safe sleeping zones. We're going to decriminalize sleep by the fast
I
first, so
then
they're just going to have to go ahead and do those things.
And over-modulating,
but you yourself
are
now no longer taking
track
meals.
Yeah.
I stopped
you can
meals.
Definitely give a call
my last
to
breakfast
David,
was
David Silva,
Tuesday
who's
had
giving
had
his phone number
here,
out here, and you can
talk
speak
about
to him. I think he'll be helpful.
Diet and supplements and
yeah, he's,
and what
he's,
to do.
He's,
and
you understand, this is the same man who has been fasting for, what, I guess it's 3 months now, gradually going off.
I'm doing almond milk and nut milks with my AIDS medication. I'm lucky that I'm one of those people that have only 3 pills I take in the morning and 3 pills I take in the afternoon.
No
over the years, I've managed
to
really simplify my regimen. I do have two other people that are HIV positive on the fast, and we're watching their doing without suppers, and the nut milk seems to be working with them. I have four people on chemotherapy, but they're on a what we call the slow progressive fast or moderated progressive fast. They're just doing Saturdays, an increasing number of Saturdays.
Getting back to your case,
we are watching people carefully.
You had to rent out your house to pay
for situation. But these people are doing it because they've had friends.
And tell me more about that.
They've known they've become homeless, so they've been homeless.
Themselves.
A lot of disabled people become
insurance
homeless
from
in this
the city.
Well, I know that Mary Kutry, our
Corey,
became homeless today.
Good morning. Yes.
Yeah, she actually became homeless at noon after they gave, I guess, at 12 o'clock the sheriff's arrived, locked her house, locked her bicycle, and all
the
possessions in her house.
But does anybody know where she's gone?
As of 5 o'clock, she was in the YWCA, but of course that closed at 5. She was not able to get a place in the satellite.
How many people are in your family?
Which I understand is generally, depends on the weather, but it's often full. So I don't know. We don't know where she is at the moment. We're hoping that
two
Donna
kids.
Dice of the Tenants' Rights Union in Santa Cruz can maybe call in and
yeah, no, that's fine.
Let us
come on, call in
so
Donna.
So you stopped by
happening. But I
want to
say one more thing, David,
break
that,
one day and
that
you suddenly found
Michael Schmidt
no
told me that the two people he has not heard from, of course, are key players, Keith Sugar and Shadow Mayor, as I call her, Catherine Byers.
They said, well, you stopped by home.
Fourth vote on this issue.
On which issue? The places for the disabled and
well, she's a key leader on both issues, actually. I mean, on the question of whether there should be a decriminalization of
sleeping.
So there's a technical thing you're saying, you stopped at your home, that's a violation of this rule, therefore you're
also the issue
of
the more limited zones.
You know, it sounds pretty, I don't know, it sounds pretty shabby.
Have you heard from either of these councilmen?
I've heard,
of course you were demoted, and then you were terminated.
So the demotion. When I got back from
my last
week
to say that she couldn't make it,
leave of absence, it was a setup for them to terminate me.
So first they demoted you because you kept this leave of absence.
I was very, very, however,
you stayed away to deal with your medical condition. Then when you returned, they set up a situation whereby when you went home to take a dump or take a
well, I think that remains to be seen.
It turned out not to be your house
or to be
her.
So we
will
we do need to increase the 420-5020.
Right, they had a reason.
Sounds pretty sneaky to me.
Yeah, I was en route, I was on my break,
thank you, Robert.
Thank you,
and
David.
I really needed to go back because I had, it was called...
And that, of course, was David Silva, who's both fasting and gathering signatures, and he has
a
much more optimistic view of the city council than I do.
Yeah,
I
you know,
noted Christopher Crone had not a word
you know,
to say about
like
a
so I was ill then,
ban
too,
after
also.
Scott Graham at the
wow.
last
well,
city,
I
regular city
well,
council meeting a week and a half ago announced he had had a day of not eating food
about this,
and thought that the idea
of
simply giving the basic human right to sleep to people in some areas of the city was sort of a no-brainer.
You know,
an elementary idea. Rotkin launched into a long rant about
by
how
them doing this
fasters and petitioners were not the point that somebody
and
should come to them with a
know,
program. Of course,
it really was
in our
a
studio with us, we have Frank Pusilik, who presented
you know,
them
I
with
have
just
child
that kind of a program,
pay,
which, of course,
and,
was ignored
you know,
and sidelined
this,
and used as a
you know,
pee in a shell
stuff,
game,
you know,
and nothing happened.
And
so
now I can't
I'm, and Sugar actually did make a statement, and it was a positive statement publicly, that a campground was one thing, and decriminalizing sleeping and in terms of the sleeping ban
really
appeal initiative
there,
that
I had,
David Silva
I
and others are
there,
pushing and I support,
you know, and I was
is another, and
my
he
best
thought that
I
was a good thing. It was
to,
the first time
you know,
he publicly made that statement, and has made any statements about sleeping for a year.
Sudden,
I suppose I should be jumping up and down and screaming for joy.
But it looks like
for a lot of reasons I'm not. I don't think that's in any way sufficient for what Sugar needs to do and what needs to be done to get this issue moved forward. I'm going to get back to my guests, however. James, you've been sitting patiently over there. Do you want to make any comments? You've been hearing us rant on and on.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming in and sharing this with the audience and seeing what.
Well, Frank apparently is the man behind the spotlight. I've been given some questions by my producer here to just grill this guy. So, Frank, we've been told time and time again that homeless campgrounds fail. They've always failed, and anyone who is foolhardy enough to try one again is only looking for trouble. How true is that?
Yes. Yeah, for Ralph Nader at the Civic Auditorium this Tuesday. I want all homeless people out there, all homeless activists to be able to tell
any program that you're going to do depends upon the organization and the quality
seating.
Of the
Say that one more time.
Homeless people will be admitted free and given preferred seating.
And this will be at what time?
The doors open at 6:30 on Tuesday.
Yeah, we're talking the Civic Auditorium.
Yes, Ralph Nader and Medea Benjamin both will be speaking about the sleeping ban in Santa Cruz.
And you can always commute back and forth between there and the city council across the street.
As a matter of fact, it might not be a bad idea if a bunch of us come from the rally, organizing rally right at the Civic and just go over to the city council because I see from pulling up on the agenda, you know, I have been, once again, led down the garden path. There is no decriminalization of sleep language on the agenda.
No, I heard something about Schmidt's token proposal will come up on the 28th, is what I heard.
I'm not talking about Schmidt's token proposal. I'm talking about the decriminalization of sleep language that the city attorney supposedly has been working on, was supposed to be on the agenda. It's not been agendized, even though I got a weekly nod from Catherine at the press conference Friday. It's not been agendized, so we have to escalate. Those of us that are on full fast will be escalating to clarified liquids, and those people on progressive fast will go to the next step. Those people on modified pass because of disabilities and so forth will be starting civil disobedience.
You have an impressive list of credentials.
Well, hey, bring that information to the table between 12 and 6 and put that out as a flyer.
Okie dokie, okie.
Thanks a lot, David.
I'm going to be laying in bed today.
Get some rest.
I have a college degree. I've worked as a consultant.
And there's a man who is literally starving himself to death in order to get some action.
For drug addicts and alcoholics, and for adult drug addicts and alcoholics, they've both been excellent programs that have broken records for success, especially the teenage program. I've spent a lot of years running around in what used to be called the Soviet Union during the last 12 years. I started a program for teenage drug addicts and alcoholics in Moscow, and it happens to be running and doing great work and is being copied all over the city. I'm involved in helping a program start in Odessa in the Ukraine, which is the last place I lived for 3 years before I came here, and they're in the process of starting. I've taught at the University of Oklahoma in the graduate division for a human resources program. I've taught human relations program. I taught at, and am still a professor at Odessa State University in Odessa, Ukraine. It's kind of stupid
what
to go on.
What kind of work are you doing now?
Right now, I'm taking some time off and helping a good friend of mine build his home.
So you have construction skills as well.
Sure. I like to take time off from using my head every once in a while and use my hands and remember what that's like.
Well, as I said, according to my producer, you have an impressive list of credentials where you were called a dream candidate by Citizens Committee for the Homeless Honchos, Paul Lee and Paul Fotenhauer. What is your background and involvement with homeless people?
I don't have a lot of background with homeless people. I have a lot of background with young people and young people in trouble. And like I said, I helped start youth services here in Santa Cruz. But I've done a lot of work with families in trouble, and families in trouble in three or four different countries, and not just in America. Mm-hmm. And a lot of families. I worked in Oklahoma for a long time with families in trouble, and so I was looking forward to working with homeless here, and particularly in the community house program, because I thought it was a way to help people, give people the assistance necessary to get back in better connection with whatever kind of future they want.
What was your experience with homeless people during the months you worked with them here in Santa Cruz, Frank?
It's hard for me to make the distinction homeless people as if they're something different. Mm-hmm. It's people are people, and I didn't find anything different among them. Some of the people who worked with me that were the most reliable and the most helpful and the most positive were quote-unquote homeless people. John Hamilton was a treasure, and he was considered a homeless person. I considered him my friend. Mm-hmm. And a person who did great work, had great energy, great knowledge, and he worked a great deal to help develop Community House, and in my opinion, Citizens Committee dealt with him much more badly than they dealt with me.
And how did Citizens Committee for the Homeless, which is the predecessor to the current Homeless Services Center, deal with the homeless?
How did they deal with the homeless?
Right. What was your, I mean, you sort of had a bird's eye view of what they were doing?
There were, in my opinion, mm-hmm. there were a lot of well-meaning, good people on the board of directors who needed more organization and needed some professional help. Their intention was good, and the Interface Satellite Shelter program, I thought, was an excellent program that did a great job and did great work. Their numbers were great. They helped the homeless garden, and I thought it was an excellent program. It could have been done a lot bigger, and it could have been done better, but it was a great program. Mm-hmm. Community House could have been a good program. I thought Safe Haven could have become maybe the best program of all for them. Because of they would have served much larger numbers and given a much more direct impact for homeless in Santa Cruz. But they were a group of people, well-meaning, who really had the intention of doing something good. Basically run by Paul Lee and Paige Smith until Paige died. And Paul Lee and Paul Fotenhauer and Daryl Darling and some of those people got together and really tried to do some good work. They made mistakes. They tried again and again and again to reorganize themselves. They were always short of funding. They were always short of organization, and they ended up having internal struggles consistently, and I thought I could do a great deal for them. I thought I was a dream candidate for them, and I really tried to help them.
A dream that turned into a nightmare for you, Frank.
Yeah, it did.
And this whole discussion is really has to do with how shabbily you were treated by the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, essentially, as far as I'm concerned, in a deal that was brokered by City Attorney Wilson and
City Manager Wilson.
I'm sorry, City Manager Wilson. City Attorney John Barisoni was not involved directly in this. And rather than we can talk about that if we want, but I think. What really is of interest is us to use your expertise. Can you describe in a nutshell what are the nuts and bolts of designing a campground for homeless people? You've already kind of done that already. You said you got to get a funding, you got to get a place, get some professional staff.
It's responsibility. Who's going to be responsible for what happens there?
Mm-hmm.
And if the city doesn't take it, or some organization like Citizens Committee or Homeless Resources or County Mental Health Service or something, somebody's got to grab a hold of it and say, it's mine.
Hi, you're on free radio.
Hi, I don't want to be.
Oh, okay.
Well, sorry about that, caller. We'll try and catch you off the air if you call right back. You were saying that we were talking about the designing
a
campground.
What's going to happen? Money, place. And who's going to be responsible, and then staff to make it happen. And those are the four things that are necessary. If you have that, then you can have a program, and I think all those things are here. Robert will be with you in just a moment.
So I'm trying to field the phones here. I got another question for you, though. What are the advantages of a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week shelter versus a nighttime shelter only for homeless people? Any sense on that?
My sense is that a 24-hour, 7-days-a-week shelter or a campground or something like that would be ideal. Because of the fact that people have to pick up their stuff every morning, pack it someplace, and then unpack it in the evening. And to me, it forces you to to spend too much time and energy on pure basic survival things and not take the time either to go find a job or do a resume or make some money for yourself or whatever. You're constantly forced to deal with the fact that you're homeless and landless and placeless. And dealing with that all the time, you don't have time to do much else. And you always have to be concerned with safety. And, you know, we know enough to know that if you're busy safe being safe, you're not busy finding out how you're going to do your future or what you're going to do to better yourself or your life or your conditions or whatever. You don't have time.
What do city fathers want to see in their communities, do you think, our city mothers and fathers? Do they want to see just no homeless people, get rid of them somehow? Or
in Santa Cruz?
Yeah. I mean, you came up with a safe haven plan. You earnestly chased your tail around for 2 months on that one.
Mm-hmm.
And not only were you dumped on that one, but in fact, you were eventually smeared and dumped from the whole program in a whole series of front page Sentinel expose articles. Not expose, it was actually a series of articles by Bob, what was his name?
Gammon.
Bob Gammon.
Who didn't bother to find out the rest of the facts, printed a few single lines taken out of quotes, accused me of 35 counts of embezzlement publicly, mm-hmm. which all turned out to be a bad joke by a crazy accountant.
Julie Phelan, as I remember.
Julie Phelan, good old Julie Phelan, had done the same thing at the place she'd been to before. Nobody with CCH bothered to check her resumes, check her references. Hired her against my word. She turned around and did the same thing to three of us, Daryl Darling, John Hamilton, Brad Robinson, and myself.
Claimed that you were all embezzlers?
That we were all embezzlers, that we were all stealing money and so forth. And, of course, Daryl Darling was ignored. He certainly wouldn't do anything like that. And John Hamilton and Brad Robinson were both homeless and demoralized and disappeared, and I was left. So I ate the crap for all of them. And a Citizens Committee basically abandoned me and stuck me out in
to dry, twisting slowly in the wind, as they used to say.
Yeah, they promised me they would take care of it for over a year, and told me to keep quiet, don't go public, don't protect yourself. We'll take care of it. We'll don't worry, we've got you. We got you covered. No big deal. And so I sat around for a year waiting for them to do something while I was slowly crucified in this community.
And eventually you got involved in the lawsuit, which I don't know how much you can talk about because there's still some, I guess, active part of it happening.
Mm-hmm.
And you sued various people in the city around that issue. I only wish we could have gotten rid of the city manager as a consequence of the lawsuit, but apparently that hasn't happened yet. That will require some political will by the people on the city council who we had hoped would, in fact, change the city manager, dump the city staff, dump the city attorney, and dump the police chief and try to get some people in there might actually make a fresh start. That hasn't happened yet. Getting back to the theme of our show, which is, of course, Bathrop Spear's Broadsides. For those of you who've tuned in late, I'm Bathrop Spear Robert, and with us is Frank Pusilik, who is an expert on designing, I guess, designing programs for you. You started out designing programs for young people and so forth, but you acquired expertise in working on a campground and working on what you called the Safe Haven Project, right?
Mm-hmm.
You were not allowed, of course, to bring it to term, but you proposed it and a lot of us supported you for it. How cost-effective is a homeless campground versus other shelter options? Any sense on that?
It's difficult to say because everything depends upon how well you do any program. And you can, but a campground obviously is less expensive than solid bricks and mortar, mm-hmm. because you don't have to buy it and build it and so forth. And again, it depends upon the amount of land that you have to purchase or procure in some way. Citizens Committee for the Homeless actually bought the land that Community House was made on with a grant from Red Cross. And the university helped in some small way, I understand, by making it less expensive than it could have been for a commercial-type project. But depending on how you get the land and whether it's bricks and mortar, I mean, you can do a campground for relatively inexpensively compared to other kinds of programs. But then you have to start asking the questions, how much social support is there? Does each person in the campground have a social worker, community supported, applied for them to help them, this and that? Can you have them in a campground without doing that? How legal do you get? How So
your campground was not really one which had a lot of social service workers planned to be running around, right? You had just planned to provide shelter for people and a safe place to be, right?
There would be one and a half, actually, social workers on call to people who wanted assistance from them.
Mm-hmm. This is not the program that would say, unless you run through these case-managed programs, then we're going to say you're a bad homeless person and we don't have anything to do with you because your homeless situation is your fault. This is the current line that we get from a lot of people.
It wasn't that restriction.
You entered Santa Cruz as a darling of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless. I understand, this is my producer writing, there were problems and pre-employment agreements or rehousing assistance for you and your family. How did you go? You can ignore this question, by the way, if you wish, since we've covered a lot of it, but I had to read it because it's so pungently put. How did you go from the project director of Community House to a larcenous, lying poverty pimp?
Mm-hmm.
Which is the way the papers put it. That's a pretty loaded question. I think we're going to have to tar and feather the producer for that question. Of course, you told us, and in essence, we've covered some of that history already, mm-hmm. right?
You know, when some program director is accused publicly of embezzlement, and when it isn't handled properly, immediately and quickly, the implication is that there's some flame behind the forest fire. And I understood that. I gave the Citizens Committee Board of Directors numerous memos that said, you must act, you must do this, you must do that. The time and your inactivity is identifying that you are guilty and I am guilty. And that's how it's coming down. You must act. They didn't. And finally, I pushed real hard, and they made up excuses and laid me off, quote unquote, after they... because they didn't have any money, and they didn't have any money because they couldn't apply for it because the city froze it because the accountant made the accusation of fraud.
Did City Manager Dick Wilson have anything to do with this process?
To my direct knowledge, no. But to my belief, absolutely. I believe that he called the grant people and told them freeze the funds because there are allegations of embezzlement against the director of one of CCH's programs. And there's no doubt in my mind. And I have heard that from several different people, but direct knowledge. Did I see him do it? No.
Weren't you trying to get a program past Dick Wilson that he didn't really want you to get past? Wasn't there friction between you and Wilson in terms of your... I mean, maybe I'm just trying to see this in a white hat, black hat kind of approach, but you were working on a safe haven project. Was Wilson sympathetic to that project?
I have no idea. Robert, I don't know.
Right. Well, I know you mentioned at different times that you found Wilson somewhat difficult to work with.
I never understood. I met Dick Wilson a few times in committee meetings and so forth and so on, and I always had the sense that he disliked me personally.
Wow. Well, you're back here, and I guess you had a conference with Mike Schmidt and others, and you presented some ideas about your experience, and you've kind of given us your sense as to how the current Safe Places proposal by Schmidt is. You think another well-intended effort that may simply end up in the endless loop that you got into? That's my view. What's your view on this?
I think that's I'm afraid that's exactly what's going to happen. Mike is a nice guy. Maybe he has enough clout behind him, and I don't know what that power structure is. I don't know how it works. But if he does, then maybe he can make something happen. And in that sense, I'm thrilled. I think that's great. It needs to happen. I don't think the armory is the answer. I mean, I'm sorry, but to me it's not a safe haven to take somebody and put them behind barbed wire fences for for 8 or 9 hours each night, and then tell them to get the hell out in the morning. And to me, safe haven has some meaning, has some value, and that's not it. Here, you can go be in a jail or a concentration camp for the night, but you can't do this and you can't do that, and there's no place for your kids to play, and there's no toys for them, there's no park, there's no openness, there's no view, there's nothing. You go and you park your little body on a piece of asphalt overnight and look at a barbed wire fence or something. I mean,
smile as you do, mister.
You know, I'm sorry, but that doesn't seem like safe haven to me. That seems like jail.
Mm-hmm. concentration camp is what some have so called it, a place where you concentrate people in a particular area. We've been talking to Frank Pusilik, and Frank, you're welcome to hang with the studio as we continue more of the same. Looks like you're looking at your watch more and more frequently. Thank you very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
And if anybody's got any questions, you better call right now, 427-3772, while we still got them here. While you're thinking of that, we will seg you into the next segment with a little of Mark Levy, Lifestyles of the Poor and Nameless.
Well, now you heard about Dallas and Fantasy Isle, American Dream, affluent style. But Robin Leach might be surprised by what I see before my eyes, watching Lifestyles of the Poor and Nameless, sleeping on the city street. Lifestyles of the Poor and Nameless, begging for a bite to eat. Lifestyles of the Poor and Nameless, seldom seen on your TV. Lifestyles of the Poor and Nameless, coming soon, you and me. Spare some change, I need a bite. Just to survive is an awful fight. I spend my time collecting cans while you're out working on your tans on Lifestyles of the Poor and Nameless, begging for a bite to eat. Lifestyles of the Poor and Nameless, sleeping on a city street. Lifestyles of the Poor and Nameless, seldom seen on your TV. Lifestyles of the Poor and Nameless, coming soon, you and me, you and me. Now 30,000 children died, while some politician lied. They bust the starving kid who steals, while the fat cats make their sweetheart deals on Lifestyles of the Poor and Nameless, sleeping on a city street. Lifestyles of the Poor and Nameless, begging for a bite to eat. Lifestyles of the Poor and Nameless, seldom seen on your TV. Lifestyles of the Poor and Nameless, coming soon to you and me.
Robin Screech here with another thrilling episode of Lifestyles of the Poor and Nameless. Today's journey takes us to the streets of your city, where we'll visit the homeless in their native habitats, street corners of makeshift cardboard shelters, sewer grate and doorway bedrooms, soup line kitchens lit by blazing oil barrel fireplaces, alleyways of the addicted, the unemployed, the destitute, the insane, eating and sleeping in the most unlikely places. It's all here on Lifestyles of the Poor and Nameless.
Now, in the ghetto, there's always room for the ethnic population boom. The melting pot boils past the brim, while the people's future's looking grim on Lifestyles of the Poor and Nameless, begging for a bite to eat. Lifestyles of the Poor and Nameless, sleeping on the city street. Lifestyles of the Poor and Nameless, seldom seen on your TV. Lifestyles of the Poor and Nameless, coming soon to you and me, you and me. Lifestyles of the Poor and Nameless.
And that was Mark Levy from his 80s album, Shiro's Heroes, one that you frequently hear if you listen long enough on my show. And this, of course, is Bathrop Spears Broadsides at 96.3 FM here on Free Radio Santa Cruz. Call-in lines are open, 427-3772, in case you want to join us. We've been doing a lot of talking about campgrounds and how they're possible. The only thing in their way is the political will. Same thing is true with the human rights issue of the sleeping ban, eliminating that even before we consider social services like campgrounds. Indeed, they seem to be a road into creating those social services by simply making it clear that people have the right to sleep, have the right to cover up with a blanket. It's going to, of course, face a woman tonight, Mary Curie, who was a 74-year-old victim of an eviction over on Walnut Street. We made our way to her apartment building today, but the sheriff beat us. Sheriff, the locksmith, and the owner. I guess it was the owner. I'm not quite sure. And actually, James, you were with us.
Yeah, and it was a marshal, not a sheriff, and he did state that that was the owner sitting there.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I know it was interesting. I mean, we got there while Mary was off to lunch, and she was alone. And we asked if we could take some of her stuff, and he adamantly refused to let us take any of the stuff.
The marshal
did.
In fact, he was so adamant that he stated that not even Mary could take her stuff, that she would have to make an appointment with the owner sometime in the next 15 days.
After paying a hearty ransom, no doubt, for storage,
yeah.
Right?
Well, actually, though, the law actually says that the landlord or owner has to provide the stuff upon payment of a reasonable storage fee immediately upon demand of the tenant. And I believe, although I'm not 100% certain, their
agent. Yeah.
Their agent, right. And by what the officer stated, the officer actually was going against his own law.
Right, he stated that even Mary could not pick up her stuff today, even though, you know, it says it used to be surrendered on demand. And I guess this is particularly important for people who are poor, because those kinds of storage fees that the landlord will be charging will eat up the kind of rent that she needs to, the first and last she needs to put down for apartments. She's, of course, been looking for 6 months for an apartment. She's a 74-year-old woman who has burns, and so she needs a bathtub. She needs to be downtown. She's not as mobile as she could be. And she wanted more time, and she couldn't get it from a landlord who apparently, by her account, was moving in other people into her apartment to get more rent. Here's a press release issued by Huff early this morning. According to the unlawful detainer and notice taped on her door, actually it was issued noon or in the afternoon, Mary Curie, age 74, will be put on the street today as early as 6:01 a.m., Miss Curie, who has dwelt in a modest one-bedroom apartment for the past 3 years, has faithfully paid her rent and kept the premises in good condition. Last August, her landlord, Michael Carney, gave her a 30-day notice to vacate. "He wants to move me out, get two people in, and charge lots more money," said Curie in a telephone interview. Miss Curie went to legal aid and was helped by Ellen Peary, candidate for the Board of Supervisors, to stipulate to a 6-month extension, which should have allowed Miss Curie enough time to find other housing. Miss Curie complained that Peary did not fully inform her of what she was signing. "I went to her office, and the stipulation agreement was left with the receptionist for me to sign. She didn't explain anything," reported Miss Curie when she learned she had waived all her rights to appeal. But despite repeated and diligent efforts to get new housing, Miss Curie was unable to find a one-bedroom apartment in town with a bathtub for $800 a month or less. Now her time has run out. Appearing on behalf of Michael Carney, local attorney Charlene Attic, that's Judge Attic's wife, processed the unlawful detainer that virtually assures that Miss Curie will never find housing again in Santa Cruz's tight housing market. Donna Dice of the Tenants' Rights Union of Santa Cruz reports unlawful detainers are occurring at a rate of about 60 per month, as tenants are unable to pay the higher rents and are unable to find affordable housing anywhere. Trusk plans a protest today at Mary's address, 321 A Walnut, near the YWCA. Mary Curie can be contacted at her home, or she could before she was evicted, at such and such a phone number. Charlene Attic, if you want to give her praise for her fine work for the landlord, is at 426-8484. Michael Carney, the landlord himself, can be contacted locally at 423-9358. And Trusk, Tenants Rights Union of Santa Cruz, and I believe Donna Dice may be listening to this show, and I invite her to call in, can be contacted at 426-0644.
Quick comment there, Robert, is that realize that, of course, not all of these unlawful detainers are merely for failure to pay rent. That is not what happened to Mary. Mary didn't not pay her rent. She paid her rent. This is merely a case of a landlord wishing to evict a tenant so that he can get more money. This is not a bad tenant. There were no allegations of, you know, abuse to the apartment or neglect or anything like that. Merely, he wants more money. So now she has an unlawful detainer on her, which will make it virtually impossible to rent anywhere else because everybody's going to say, oh my God, she doesn't pay her rent. Well, that's not true. And this is happening, as he says, 60 a month. I mean, come on. These are not all. I mean, there are. So I'm not saying people don't get evicted for not failing to pay rent. But what people don't realize is that an unlawful detainer does not state on it whether you didn't pay rent or not, just that you have an unlawful detainer.
True enough. Yeah, it shows the need for those of you out there who are, you know, walking softly because you're afraid your landlord is going to dump your butt in the street, and that may be many of us, if not most of us. I'm certainly one of those people. It's time for us to get together and start demanding of this city council that seems to be babbling so much about affordable housing by evicting 200 to 300 Hispanic residents in the Beach Flats for their gold-plated affordable housing project that the very people they're going to evict will not be able to get back into, to demand instead that there be real affordable housing, that the money be properly spent, and that there be some protections for renters in this town. We need to establish some municipal protections. And, of course, Donna Dias, the Tenants' Rights Union, has been saying this for years, as have many of us. I think we need to say it louder in a more organized form. And I like to suggest to folks that when the homeless protest begins for ending the sleeping ban and setting up safe sleeping zones, not places but zones, that'll be hopefully on March 8th downtown, that we can kind of combine these causes, because I think that homelessness and profiteering by landlords and speculators are really two different sides of the same coin. Your thought, James?
It is. It's piracy. Piracy of the human race. I mean, and that's what our city council is allowing. They're saying that, hey, you know what? If you don't have $1 million, we don't want you around here. We don't like your kind. You're not paying enough rent. Let's kick them out and let's get somebody in there that'll pay some more. Let's make all our landlords millionaires. What's wrong with that? It's not a reality. Where are all the people out there that are giving you the services going to live? Where are the people in the McDonald's and in the stores and anywhere else like that where they pay the lowest wages of anywhere? And this is Santa Cruz County, one of the richest counties, they say, one of the leading ones in money, and yet some of the lowest wages. I have seen so many other places in the state of California where no store in its right mind would offer you $6 an hour to be a clerk, to be a not necessarily a clerk, but a salesperson, okay? We have salespersons out there that work for $6 an hour because that's the prevailing wage in Santa Cruz, because Santa Cruz says that unless you're a rich person, you're nobody.
Well, I know that you've been having some problems, and you're certainly not a rich person there, James. I think you're trying to smog a new vehicle you've gotten, and you've been having endless problems with the police. I know that you got me interested in a story earlier today because you showed up about a year ago at the task force to examine the camping ordinance, the little joke group that
actually predates the current task force.
Right, there's a task force. We currently have a task force on homeless issues, but this was a task force to examine the camping ordinance at the time when Keith Sugar and Christopher Crone were allowing Catherine Byers to lead them around by the nose going nowhere, to in essence pretend that they were looking for real changes in this human rights obscenity, the sleeping ban we have in Santa Cruz, and then have Catherine Byers unilaterally announce we're not going to make any changes, and have Byers
for the
Sugar just sort
and
of
we
go,
have
oh, yes,
that,
yes, ma'am,
and
yes, ma'am,
and
that was that, instead of the advocacy
give,
that they needed to do, and they still need
Huff,
to do.
You
were part of
fast,
some of those committee meetings, and
leave a
there were police officers who were present, notably Sergeant Butchie Baker. And Sergeant Baker, of course, aside from being notorious when he was previously, before he was a sergeant, for 9 or 10 complaints by women of inappropriate sexual searches, inappropriate touching of body parts. Actually, the investigation that, to some extent, led to the Citizens Police Review Board. It was the first and only city council was appointed to investigate before the council lost its nerve and backed away from that investigation, and Baker was declared Man of the Year by the police department the next year, Officer of the Year, and then promoted to Sergeant. Sergeant Baker was in this sort of the one of the point men of the police department in this task force to examine the camping ordinance, and you had an interesting encounter with him that I hadn't really been aware of. Tell me more about that.
Well, talking to David and listening to your show, I just keep thinking
you yourself were homeless
this,
at that time.
Was camping sleeping ban certainly would seem to be flagrantly unconstitutional and legally actionable, and I'm wondering why no one has approached the matter in terms of an injunction to just slam it down until some judge can consider the constitutionality of it, and perhaps that could be a discussion for your show, and other people, including David, could call in and explain to me why nobody is approaching the problem from that angle.
I can give you kind of a brief answer based on my limited knowledge.
All right.
The sleeping ban, of course, has been in the book since 1978.
Make their statements, say what they have to say, and
only
go
recently,
away
within the last decade, it's gotten a lot
harassment.
More.
Mr. Baker himself stated that
opposition of a high profile sort
meeting there.
They actually made these statements also regarding people who were being filing reports about beatings, that they shouldn't worry about sleeping tickets being held against them or other criminal charges, that they would be treated with respect, and that they would that these other things would be ignored for the moment while those issues were brought forward. Of course, we found 3 months ago that Kurt,
in the Pottinger case in 1991,
or was it Carl, I can never be sure, the fellow who filed it, who was beaten up by the Mission Street 7-Eleven and then attempted to file a complaint, got himself arrested for drunk
Miami,
before he could get his, you know, his complaint out.
Clay
was held in the tank,
kind of
bleeding,
and
released at 1:30 into the rain. Yeah,
and they just stopped. They stopped enforcing their.
But I'm sorry, I interrupt your story. So you were on the second floor of the library, I guess, at one of the meetings of the task force to examine the camping ordinance.
At
that meeting, I again brought up because the officer was sitting there in his uniform with his gun,
because they feared.
And so I brought it up and raised it as a very legitimate issue.
American Civil Liberties
and spoke
Union has
very
never
strongly and forcefully, while politely,
repeatedly brought in people like Bob
and
Perrin.
All recordings of almost all these meetings, you can see there was no
head of the,
abusive
Paul
language
Johnson,
to the gentleman. I was
spoke
very polite to him.
ACLU. They are so entrenchedly upper middle class that they cannot see this as a civil rights violation that they want to put time and energy into. I mean, they actually did support, to some extent, they supported the City Hall sleepers protest in a very limited way in 1996 when Mayor Mike Rotkin tried to close it down entirely and close down City Hall to protest at night as a sort of a basic civil rights issue for middle class protesters. But in terms of, it seems to me like the short answer, Phil, is it's a class issue.
Came out the door behind
that
me.
It just isn't,
on the second,
you know, isn't something that Santa
library,
Cruz. It's a class issue. It's a political power issue. The people in the American Civil Liberties Union, or
said,
people who might challenge
name?
It, are too
and
closely
said,
in bed with
why?
Progressives
you
and
you
like Mike Rotkin, Catherine Byers,
said, oh, no.
For some,
says,
for some reason have made the sleeping ban, you know, part of their career. I mean, they don't want to change it, and people do not want to challenge them. It's also,
and
it also should be said in all fairness
course,
that in California, the sleeping ban has been upheld
and
as facially
so
constitutional at a state
James
level, although not
said,
necessarily as applied.
Don't you have a son named James?
Which means
well,
they could find one
says,
case
well,
where the law
would you
could
mind
hold
going
up,
downstairs?
There
I have
lots
two
of
officers down there waiting for you and your son, and we'd like you to accompany us.
Given the fact that homeless people have no legal places to sleep.
Now here, we've just been promised.
So
at the meeting,
that's a long-winded answer. The lack of energy, I'd say class bias and political
questions, and we would not have warrant checks
really,
or anything like that.
You know, also lack of organizing
when
as activists. We
had,
you know,
really
we
no
have,
reason
we don't,
to
you,
harass
you go in there and you file a claim against the city. You get the law books, and I think we should get you to file some kind of a significant legal claim against
the
city. I will personally buy you lunch.
So the three of them then take us across the street to the administrative offices of the police department.
The truth is,
and proceed to tell me that my son, who was one of the victims of the troll busters
and
was beaten pretty badly,
it is not that complicated,
that, you know,
should not, and I wouldn't even recommend
that.
Involving
that he was
an
the
attorney.
Troll buster.
I don't see
they
why
had
you
absolute witnesses
and or David or
they made us come in
anyone
and
of
all
a dozen
BS
people I could name
video
who
imaging
are,
and all this, even though the first words out of my mouth when they said this
don't have
was,
the sufficient intelligence and wherewithal to
their witness.
To do the homework and
actually, they had no victim.
Write it up
they
and
had a supposed
for a couple
witness,
hundred bucks. who you file it in
see
Superior Court, and
but could
even
not provide
assuming
the
you lose at that
she,
level,
she couldn't
which
provide
is probably
a name,
just a realistic expectation,
mm-hmm.
you take it on up
your
the, son, the chain of the court system.
Your son was never charged, right?
To me that somebody's got to say, well, you can repress these people in more subtle ways than just spelling it all out so flagrantly in black and white, and at least get them to strike the obnoxious language.
Whatever the case, it seems strange.
I would be happy to sit down with an older
person
like yourself and try to find a way
after
to do that.
After you had been assured that you and other homeless people coming to these meetings would not be harassed.
Protests,
so it's interesting that it tends to show the lack of credibility
of
some of the police officers.
The
use of my 14-year-old son against
civil disobedience,
didn't come
legal challenges, even, you know, sitting around schmoozing with Mayor Sugar, if anybody can ever get a phone call returned from him, you know, I mean, that would be great.
The woman they used is a
I appreciate your suggesting that. Are you able to put in a little time to sit down and talk about this at some future point?
Well, I would hope that somebody would take the lead on
your thought was that this might have been
a
function of you speaking at the meeting?
It's almost one of the things I like about it is that can't
stop
be exactly a one-person job. You don't need to
well, it's certainly
do
whether it was that or not, it certainly seemed to
and you don't
actually
need
happen
to,
in close proximity.
Pressure people on the city council who are clearly just going to stick their heads in the sand on the issue, no matter who starves to death.
Are we telling Butchie Baker stories?
This is something that can be done, whether or not the
doing,
judicial
Robert?
System
bad,
has
Bob.
Any more
sounds
integrity
good.
Than the political system is a question
that sounds bad. I had a little run-in with
but at least it's an untried avenue.
Well, you should be aware that we have challenged the Constitution. Of the sleeping ban in particular cases.
And my whole
and
thing was when he
high,
turned
guess,
about
Superior
a year
Court
and a half ago,
and was found
ago,
constitutional by Judge
was,
Kelly
the community
in 1997
officer,
who ruled
still is. I'm not sure.
In the Dan Hopkins City Hall Sleepers cases
to
that because
of, like,
there are places for people to sleep
kids
during the day,
take care of all these problems,
that it's okay that
so
homeless
one
people
of his
simply
community
have to sleep
service
during
projects
the day.
Was to go out and collect shopping carts from homeless people and ticket them for stolen merchandise.
It does, and it seems wrong
yeah,
that
Officer
anybody
Perry
of good sense
and
conscience.
Yeah, Officer Perry and the other
and
officer.
And you're, I think you're...